Yeah, I mean, that was part of the flower child ethos, if I can put it that way. I know, looking at your 75-year-old mother, it's funny to think about flower children.
I've seen the pictures in the crop top. This is not strange to me.
Okay.
Y'all, I am so excited. It is finally time to introduce you to the legend herself, my Jewish mother. Truth be told, she's a huge reason that I even started this pod. I was really curious about how much in the way I was raised was, you know, just being raised Jewish, and how much was maybe just because of her idiosyncratic parenting style. Well, today we're going to dig into that, and we're going to start with perhaps the most foundational mother-daughter conversation you can have. We're going to talk about sex. Specifically, we'll be talking about how she talked to me about sex when I was growing up. And of course, that comes from how she was raised to think about sex. You are definitely going to hear some embarrassing stories about me, and like a real ride or die, about my mom as well. But I do want to give you a little heads up, since this is a very frank conversation, we are just like that. There may also be some things in this episode that make people a little bit uncomfortable. But where there is love, there is also laughter. So I hope you really enjoy this ridiculous, meandering, loving conversation with my thoughtful, kind, sweet Jewish mommy. First of all, hi, mommy.
Hi, baby girl.
Do you remember when you told me we were in the car? I remember this so vividly. I think we were driving down Campbell Avenue. And I said to you, you know, I don't know how it happened in my head, but like I had gone through this process in my head basically where I was like, well, I've already been doing this anyway. It hasn't caused any harm. No one has even noticed. I'm going to continue doing it. There's really nothing anyone can do to stop me. So I think I'm just going to tell my mom so that she at least knows what's going on. And I remember being in the car with you and saying, you remember all those times that I've like been staying at Amanda's house over this weekend or the last few months? And you were like, yes. And I said, well, I was actually at Ryan's house. And I just wanted to let you know that I stay over there a lot and I have a key and I'm going to stay over at my boyfriend's house. And that's how it's going to be. And I don't really remember. I remember you did not get mad, but I remember that you were like, okay. And then you asked me basically, you know, are you using protection? Do you need to go to the doctor? Is there anything else that you need? And I had already taken care of all of that because city kids. And I was like, nope, I don't need anything from you. I just thought you should know where I was at night.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as you started repeating the conversation, which frankly, I don't remember, I was thinking to myself, well, I need to know you're safe. So then sure enough, you came out with, well, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, if that's what you're doing and you're telling me that's what you're going to do, I'm going to say, let's do it safely and be sure. So
the other half of that is you explained to me then that, you know, in Judaism, you were like, if people are having sex, but they're in love and they're monogamous and they have an agreement about it, that's considered a marriage. I don't know how old I was, but I was like, well, I don't know about marriage, but but I remember thinking, not that I wasn't really expecting that reaction, but I guess I hadn't really thought about it. It was one of those things that living in a world where everybody is so like, about sex, all of my peers were so freaked out about it, but it was also so built up in their heads. It was hard for me to be like, I don't feel like I'm doing anything wrong. And there wasn't really anyone to talk to because I didn't really know where that was coming from. And so, yeah. So thinking back on it, of course, now I realize it's a very different perspective coming from the Jewish perspective.
Absolutely. It's just a different worldview. I mean, you may or may not remember, and you had a young man in your room and I sent him away at 4 o'clock in the morning, and you were looking at me like you were afraid. And I just put my arms around you. I said, what? There's nothing to be afraid of. I mean, this is perfectly normal. We're designed to have these desires and feelings. But you have to remember, if you have sex with somebody, you have to be careful of their feelings. Are you ready to be responsible for his feelings? I said, look, this is not me. This is being Jewish. God says, go forth and multiply. And I don't understand how people in our culture are so freaked out about people who want to go forth
multiply.
And multiply.
I would like to multiply. I did not want to multiply, for the record.
No, but I mean, the point is, that's what these feelings and desires and urges are for. And so, yes, okay, we're not ready to have babies when we're 15. No question. But it's okay. Are you being safe? Do you know what you need? Do you have what you need? And have you seen a doctor? And that's all.
I think the bigger thing, and like, I think that this is still part of what remains why dating for me is different, I think, than the majority of people. I mean, I think there's probably, you know, I think there's a lot of reasons for that. But I think being raised in a way where, you know, sex and feelings are combined, sex for pleasure is a good thing, as long as it's the expression of the pleasure of someone's company, the pleasure of being with somebody. And that's still how I look at sex. But it, you know, there were all those years in between of like, how am I supposed to do this casually like everybody else is doing it? And I always hated it. I always hated it. And I never really felt like I was able to, you know, I had friendships that there were occasional sexual encounters and we would both be like, ha ha, that was ridiculous. Oh my God. And we would remain friends. That was fine. Those always felt okay. But actual, pure, casual, like unattached sex for me always felt like shit. It just never felt good. And I think what you were, you know, saying then was basically like, it's one thing to say, are you being safe so you don't have babies? It's another thing to say, okay, are you being safe with everybody's feelings?
That's where I was going to go with that, because it's fine to have casual relationships, but they have to be explicit. You can't go into it blindly or having the other person be blind. There are two human beings here, and both of them have to know what's going to happen to their feelings. And that's, and then it's fine. One of my favorite memories is of a dancer at University of Wisconsin. And we decided to have, I was actually working on the newspaper. I don't know if you knew that. I was the dance reviewer for the Badger, the Wisconsin University newspaper. And I really was attracted to him. And at the end of our interview, I said, I'm really attracted to you.
You just said, Mother, that is a violation of journalistic ethics.
Well, that we were done. I'd already turned in my thing. And he said, oh, I'm so glad you said that, because I am too. And we laughed. And then we said, what are we going to do about it? And he said, what would you like to do about it? And we did. And that was it. We went our separate ways. And it was delightful.
Yeah.
And that's the way it should be. I mean, as long as it's explicit and both people say what they're feeling and what they're looking for.
Yeah.
I mean, if one says, I really am in love with you, and the other one says, well, I don't really feel that way. Maybe we should not do what's going to make you feel safe and happy and not jeopardize your feelings or make you feel like I'm promising something I'm not promising.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know if you knew this. That also reminds me of a story that happened when I was living in Cyprus. I met a guy. He was super, super nice. We were seeing each other. I mean, we were going out, having dinner, doing stuff. He was raised very, very Catholic. And he was actually from the Midwest, as I recall. No, wait, was he? Yeah, I think he was actually from Chicago. I could be wrong. Wait.
Like your mom.
Right. Or not. Anyway, he was raised very, very Catholic, very Italian, lovely young man. And there was a time, you know, where we were kind of fooling around. We kind of got into the point. And he just like was like, well, anyway, good night. And I was like, I'm so confused. And that happened a couple times. And I was just sensing some awkwardness in his awareness of his body, if that makes sense. I was sensing that he was really uncomfortable with his physicality in that context. And I was like, tell me a little bit more about your last relationship. And they had been together for like a few years. And then I think they were engaged and then they broke up. And I was like, and did you guys ever have sex? And he said, no. And I suddenly was like, are you a virgin? And he was late into his 30s. Not late, but in his middle 30s. Because I was probably, how old was I when I was 35? So we were around the same age. And I was like, oh, okay. And he was like, what? What's the big deal? And I was like, yeah, I'm not going to be the one. So, of course, he was like, well, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, you know, I was going to wait until I got married. And then the marriage didn't work out. And now I've, you know, decided basically like as long as I'm in a good situation, I feel good about it. I feel good doing it. And I was like, here's the thing. That's fine as long as you're in the same developmental place as somebody else. I'm not going to be your first. I'm not going to be the one, because what you don't understand is how much sex changes things. And I can't be the one to be, I'm not going to shepherd you through that, because it's, and he was like, well, I don't know why I should change anything. And I was like, I know that you don't know. I understand that you don't know.
That's why we're having this.
What I'm telling you is, as a person who has lived the life, like, I do you remember what a fucking crazy person you were after the first time you had sex? A crazy person. You're a crazy person after the first time. You're a crazy person after the second time. You're a crazy person after the first person. You're a crazy person after the second person. You just, it doesn't all fit together. And that's why it's like, okay, if you're going to wait till you get married, then wait till you get married and you and that person are on the same page. You're already bonded together. So it's a safe space for you to explore that confusion and that intensity. And you know, no one's going to leave anybody, which is part of the scary part of doing it outside of the bonds of marriage and, you know, a traditional marriage, I suppose. And so I'm like, yeah, you're already gone this far. You need to wait for that.
Well, I understand. It was kind of different for me because I'm a child of the 60s. Mm. And we were all, you know, in posses and experimenting as groups. And we knew, I mean, I remember my first encounter vividly. Of course, don't we all? But it was talked about. It was like, okay, you know, this is your first and it's this could happen and that could happen and you need to know. And I mean, it was all a subject of conversation, no matter what people's upbringing was.
Oh,
if you were in the hippie group, that's the preface. So yeah, I mean, that was part of the flower child ethos, if I can put it that way. I know looking at your 75-year-old mother, it's funny to think about flower children.
I've seen the pictures in the crop top. This is not strange to me.
Okay. My recollection is that everybody in the group was very outspoken about it and shared a lot and, you know.
So you guys were all kind of taking responsibility for each other in that way.
Yes, that's exactly what the whole hippie movement was about. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were sort of, I don't know, baby kibbutzniks, I guess.
It's like, kibbutz light with a lot more sex. Well, maybe not. No, we don't know.
I don't know
what the kibbutzniks were doing.
Exactly.
I'm curious how much of that ability, though, to communicate you think was because of being raised Jewish. Let me ask you this. How were you raised specifically in your family with my grandparents? How were you raised to think and talk about sex growing up? Did it even come up, or were you sort of left to discover it on your own?
Well, sort of both. I mean, when I was like, I guess 14, my mother said, now we have to talk about sex. You know, and she just sat me down and said, you know, we have to talk about sex. And because that's a Jewish mother. And I said, it's okay, Mom. I kind of know everything. And she said,
14?
Well,
how did you know? You lived in Chicago.
No, we were on the North Shore and we talked, especially at Sunday school. Hello.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, she said, well, do you know this and do you know that? And, you know, I said, you don't have to talk about the doctor stuff.
That's funny.
I said, I get that. I said, but how do you know when you really love somebody? That was the question I had. I mean, the anatomical stuff. And
you were like, that all makes sense to me. Yeah, I got it.
I get it. And I know about condoms and I know about diaphragms. We don't have to go there. But this is what. And then I don't even remember what she said. I just remember thinking, okay, that's not helpful.
She may not be the one to ask for this.
Exactly. I mean, my mother was not, yeah. But, you know,
but at least she brought it up.
Yes.
Yeah, she tried.
And of course, she intimated, although she was too embarrassed to tell me, and I was too young, that she and dad had had sex. I mean, she and
at least
my
four
dad
times.
Had sex
at least
before
four
they
times.
Were married.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, yeah. No, it was clear. And actually, Auntie Susan and I talked about this. She said, of course, you can tell.
Well, but you know what's funny, too? I mean, thinking about that, your mom was kind of part of that. Not kind of. Your mom was part of the sort of artisty intelligentsia set.
Well, very much. And don't forget, it was, you know, it was between the wars. I mean, they got married in 1940. So they were courting the 2 years before that. And as she said, very nonchalantly, and as you say, she was an artist. She said, well, we were all a little pink in those days, meaning, you know, they were scared of the anti-communists under the, you know, the John Birch Society was after them.
Oh, so but she was saying all of us were sort of communistically minded.
The
and
intelligentsia.
We were pretty
scared. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. The intelligentsia. That uh-huh. makes sense.
So, yeah. I mean, yeah. So, and of course, they had met at Northwestern, and there were funny stories about that too. But, you know, finding a Jewish boy in those days, this was part of the meaning because all the other people that she knew were. Oh, if you have sex, you're a loose woman, you're a slut, you're a whore. And it was like, no, we're not doing that. That's yucky. Yeah, I mean, you
boy,
know.
You guys are going in on the shame over here. Yeah. I mean, we're more into the guilt.
Yeah, but not about sex. Not-
Amen.
About people's feelings? Yes, yeah. Definitely guilt. Yeah. I mean, you know my story about the mother, Jewish mother who brings her son two ties for his birthday. I've told you that one. She says, oh, mom, gives her a kiss. That's so sweet. I'm going to run right up and put one on. And he comes down and he goes, ta-da. And she says, what's the matter? You don't like the other one? I mean, you know.
That you're telling that as a parable for the guilt feelings.
Yes.
You guilt about the feelings. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, it's all about people's feelings.
Yeah. 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 So were you able, I mean, I actually find that, you know, I never knew your mom. I only know her through stories and as she seems to have been quite the presence. I think ironically, Jordy and my older sister, Jordy and your older sister, Susan, have the same vitriol for her. Not the same, not exactly, but they share an unhappy set of memories.
Yes, they have. Well, the deep set of antipathies that they both have are because my mother was not empathic, because she was a narcissist, and because she trampled on people's feelings. And both of them have reason. I mean, I was there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know.
And so. Your dad was very different, though. And I'm curious because, like, I mean, all my memories of him are like shrouded in a warm, sort of half smile, sort of almost a, oh God, I can't remember. You know, the monk haircut. Come on. You know what I'm talking
tonsure.
Yes. In my memory, he's a sort of tonsured, half smiling, befreckled, bemused being of warmth and chuckles, sort of under his breath, sardonic, loving jokes.
And that's the way he aged. I mean, as a younger man, he was full of energy. He would run up the stairs always because he said that was his only exercise.
That's why you keep telling me that crap about these stairs.
Yes. Well, I don't run up them anymore, but I do go all the way up from the bottom to the top without stopping. Yes. But yes, he always told interminable jokes that were hilarious. And he loved to make people laugh. And he cared how we felt, with the exception of my brother, but that's another story.
Yeah. And so I guess my question is, was it even within the father-daughter relationships, and I know you each had individual relationships with him, he almost seems like the kind of dad that in the 60s, a young daughter could talk about sex with. Was that a thing or still no? Yeah,
it just didn't come up because I told you my whole thing with my mom, which I think spread generalized to both of them, was where are you going out? Who are you going with, friends? What are you going to do? Nothing. I mean, I just was not going to share
timeless
anything if I didn't have to. And so in many ways that extended to my dad, although I wasn't guarded about it with him.
He just didn't ask.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
But he was the kind of dad who, when I was a senior and I had straight A's my junior year, I did not my whole high school. I mean, I did pretty well. I ended up on the honor roll, et cetera, in a class of 1,500 students, my senior class at New Trier. I was 114, which is not at all
pretty
bad.
Good.
Yeah. Anyway, and so when I was a senior, he said, listen, if you're going to cut school, because I was already accepted early admission to Wisconsin. Mm. So I was set. Mm-hmm. And I'd done all my, I had AP courses and I was done with all my requirements. He said, look, if you and your friends are going to cut class, don't give them my your home phone number to call. Have them call my office. And my cousin Davey, we would just, I would go down there. I would cut school and go down and we would go to the baseball games together and we would go to the beach and, you know, and he would, apparently the school would call dad and he would say, oh yes, she's not feeling well today.
Is this why you weren't mad when I did that in high school?
Of course.
I didn't know that because I thought I was being sneaky giving Renee's cell phone number. When we got cell phones, it was game over. We were never going to school. And it was because I would like write the note from you and I would fake your signature. And I put, you know, if you have any questions, please call me with Renee's cell phone number. And they would call Renee and she would say, oh, yes, my daughter, blah, blah, blah. And then some genius secretary got it in her head to like look at the actual card that we had to fill out, our admissions card, and actually called you. And, the only reason I found out is because when I got home that you didn't say anything. You didn't call me. You didn't do anything. So someone was like, this girl seems to be going to a lot of dental appointments and called the actual number on the card. And you did the same thing. You said, yep, uh-huh, she's out of school. I had not discussed it with you.
Yes, that was true.
Technically, I was not in school.
That's right.
And it wasn't until I got home that you were like, by the way, the office called me today. Could you just give me a heads up?
Right? And my whole thing, and I was much more explicit with Zeb because I realized.
Because you had two daughters that already did it. And you were like, oh, God, he's a boy. He's an idiot. He's going to fuck this up.
That was not in my head. It was just that he was more palpably ADHD even than you. And I said to him, yeah, sorry.
Well,
since I am too, I'm allowed to.
He was basically an only child by then,
that's
too.
So right.
He had no.
Exactly.
But he didn't bounce it off.
Exactly what I was going to say. Anyway, so I said to him, look. As long as your grades are up and you're doing well and you're doing all of your requirements, don't worry about cutting school. Just let me know that you want to go to Ben's or whatever it is you're doing, and then I will cover for you. So, yeah, I mean, it's not that I tried to encourage you to break the rules.
No.
It was that there were
But you
standards.
Weren't really big into being arbitrary about it.
Exactly.
That was the thing that, and I think that also, like, that's a whole different conversation about, like, what's the Jewishness in, like, sure, rules, okay, but why? Where it's like, the rules, I get it. Sometimes you can't explain it, especially if you're dealing with a group of people. It's just like, that's just the rule. So just do it. But it's the arbitrariness that is like, okay, but if we're going to get right down to it, it's really not doing any harm. And that actually takes us full circle to me being like, I just don't feel like I'm doing anything wrong. So why is everyone making it feel like this is something wrong? I'm curious, like, for you, at least when you became a mom, did being raised, you know, Jewish on the North Shore of Chicago inform your thoughts about sex for your kids?
I think it's all part of the same conversation we're having. I mean, there is an added piece, and I alluded to it before talking about mom. You know, I often quote the good things she said, like, there's nobody who's so awful they can't serve as a bad example. Well, that's true of my mom.
Everyone's good for something.
Exactly. And that also is a Jewish value, right? Everybody has something to teach you. Yeah. Every single human being.
Yeah.
No matter how awful they are. And there were things that my whole, especially teenage life, I don't remember particularly doing this earlier, but I often would see her do things or hear her do things and say to myself, I'm never going to do that with my kids. Mm. And I never forgot that stuff. But it all had to do with just what we're talking about. It all is a matter of values and worldview. And the stuff that I did with you and your sister and brother was all a matter of what I learned from my dad, but also in terms of all the stuff we've been talking about. It's just a matter of what are your goals for this child? Mm-hmm. Is the child able to achieve them? What are the child's goals and mm-hmm. how do they feel? Do you remember the time you got lost coming back on your bicycle from middle school?
Oh my God, yes.
And I went looking for you everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the point, is being aware of what the child wants to do and whether she's able to do it.
Yeah.
And whether when you need to step in and when you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's partly the center of the Jewish values we're talking about. Let a human being be a human being, care about their feelings, and act accordingly.
Yeah. I mean, and that was the whole thing too, that I kind of grew up not really understanding, was the shame. I didn't understand that that was a Jewishy thing. It's really interesting now as a woman in my 30s, like a lot of my friends are divorced. A lot of my friends are, you know, coming up on 40. A lot of people are on the other side of unsuccessful marriages. And I shouldn't say unsuccessful, right? Because everything teaches us something. Or have been single for a long time, like myself, where it's sort of like, ooh, sort of watching my friends get married in our 20s and being like, I don't think I want that for myself per se. Some of it worked out, some of it didn't. But a lot of the conversations that I've had with my older female friends, especially, many of them have told me explicitly that it has reshaped their relationship, not just with sex, but with what they are allowed to expect from a relationship. Not for men per se explicitly, but like, you can do whatever you want. You just can't be mean. And it makes it a lot easier to forgive people for things, because it's like, I don't think that wasn't personal. That's just a him thing. You know, it makes it a lot easier to monitor your own behavior, because you have to ask yourself, am I being mean spirited, or am I working on something on myself right now? Am I acting out a pattern? Am I responding to trauma? Am I responding to a trigger? Or am I just being kind of an asshole?
And also, you have to be explicit. That's the thing.
That's the thing too, that I've said for many, many years, is that it's like, I don't mind. You just need to say it.
Exactly. Just so, tell me what's going on with right. you, and then we can deal with it together.
And that's what it is. If you don't want to be monogamous, we can have that conversation. If you do need to be monogamous, we need to have that conversation. If you want to take whatever to the next level, that's fine. We just all need to be on the same page.
Well, yes and no. I mean, there is an element of, I'm really going through some shit right now. I can't handle it. Are you okay with that for the time being? Which may mean nothing to do with the sexual relationship per se, but we as two people who are intimately connected,
mm-hmm.
Can you handle this, or do we need to chill for a while so you don't have to cope with it? Are you in a place where you can help me or not?
I think that that's, for me, I think that's the fundamental difference. The acknowledgement from both parties,
yes.
explicitly men and women,
yes.
men as well,
yes.
are tasked with the responsibility of understanding, if you are asking with your behavior or your words or the situation someone to become sexually involved with you, you are asking for an intimate connection.
Precisely.
And you have to acknowledge that intimacy. Yes,
exactly. On every level. It can't just be, oh, we're going to lie down and have a poke.
Yeah.
I mean, it has to. Yeah, I'm sorry. That was
cute. I've never heard that before. 1947 showing. What's going on?
No, that's actually from Selma Ray or whatever that was. There was a wonderful, wonderful
Sally movie. Field.
Sally Field yeah. movie. Yeah.
Norma Ray.
Norma Ray. That was the name. Anyway, the guy who she has a really nasty relationship with says, you just spread your leg for a poke and then you
gross.
Expect. Yeah, it was anyway. Gross. That's the point. It can't just be about sex. It has to be about, okay, we're going to do this together. And right now I can continue, but I'm really upset about other stuff.
Well, it can be just about sex. It just has to, that's the only way it's fun.
It has to be explicit.
If everybody's
exactly.
in agreement that like, this is going to be fun.
Exactly.
Okay, bye.
Yes.
So, I mean, I think that's all I really wanted to cover with you. Do you?
We pretty much covered the waterfront.
Yeah. I mean, is there anything specific to how Judaism thinks or addresses issues like this that you think that you didn't mention or that we didn't cover? Or, I mean, what is
just
the Jewish part
the way
of approaching it?
Well, I was thinking about, I'm pretty sure it was Roth, one of the great 20th century Jewish fiction authors, has a segment where the young boy who's the center of the story is in the cellar feeling up his girlfriend. And his father comes downstairs, "What are you doing? Bring the girl upstairs. She's going to get cold." And that sort of expressed the whole thing. It's like, oh my God, you're going to freeze her to death. Bring her upstairs or she'll be warm. And I think that's the bottom line.
If you're going to do it, be nice about it, for God's sakes.
That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
So
thanks, Mommy.
I love you.
I love you. Thanks for listening to Jew-ish. If you like what you hear, please give us a follow and don't forget to tell a friend who might be a little Jew curious. It really is the best way to help people find us. Also, make sure you check out the show notes for a glossary of terms you might have heard in this week's episode. Jew-ish is a Say More production.